is a honey buzzer. So, Dave, when you're ready, well, you better tell us. You better tell us the bad news.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I had intended to say a few words about Ian's performance. I was given the witch's warning outside the door, so obviously being a Welshman didn't worry me that much if I upset you, but nevertheless, I'm not going to say any more than it was a great match. I don't think it was a great match. That's why we're just getting into the door now. I won't spend long just speaking to you. I just think we'll get on with the talk. I know we haven't got very long, and I think we're running a little bit behind. So I'll get straight on. But I wanted to start with a good slide, a slide that I felt was would start to show with a bit of a bang. And I've had a long think over the last sort of 10 or 15 years, what would be the highlight of those last 10 or 15 years. And I just want to say, any visitors are very interesting birds, but rugby football is life and death in the valleys of Wales. And our time will come, what goes around comes around.
Not in your life.
Not quite as good as the last picture, you know, but since I spoke to you last, we have managed to get some hides up on some honey buzzard nests and managed to get some, well, I hope a bit better slides anyway. This is the subject of today's talk, the honey buzzard. It's you should be familiar with it from looking at books, you know, they're a long distance trans-Saharan migrant. Come here in the middle of first week of May, first 10 days of May. It's got a peculiar anatomical adaptations for its insect diet. You can see the wasp's nest just behind it there with the cap still on. It's got a small head, it's got a narrow bill, it's got a long tail. It's got no bare parts between the bill and the eye so that wasps can't sting the bare parts. This illustrates the long neck and that slender bill used for sticking in crevices, and even though that branch is in the way, it does show that it's got a particularly long tail. This nest, incidentally, is well known amongst honey buzzard enthusiasts as the worst nest in Britain. If you read about honey buzzard nests, they're described as being large structures copiously covered with greenery and foliage. And we've got this scrubby little thing that's sort of stuck in a cross, looks like a bit of brashins that's fell in there. Well, I can only explain it as this nest is in the eastern valleys of Wales. It's something like a little mid-terraced house in Abbott Laring. I don't know if this nest is in the Scotland's belt of sunny. It's going to be three times as big as it has six chicks in it. This is a slow adult female that shows that honey buzzards balance very well on one leg. And also how very short the tarsus is. Anybody that picks a honey buzzard up to ring them, any ringers here, I'm not a ringer, but any ringers here that handle honey buzzards will always be struck by how short the tarsus is. They don't have to put their legs into vegetation and bushes to catch small birds and mammals. It's mainly designed for digging out wasp nests. So where do we find honey buzzards? Well, if you read up all your literature, the southern lowland woodlands of Britain are the favoured places, it says. Mainly beech, you will read in some books, and indeed they do nest in those areas, and they're quite favourable towards honey buzzards, and we've found plenty of nests in that part of the world. We work on honeys in that part of the world as well. So you can imagine my surprise when some years ago I'm walking along the edge of this clear fall on that piece of plantation at the back there. It's a spruce plantation, it's not thinned. It's 500 metres above sea level, more than 500 metres above sea level. It's on the top of the hill. It's not down the valley bottom. Not particularly sort of habitat you would expect to find honey buzzards. It was raining, as it always is in Wales, and as I was walking down the edge of the plantation, honey buzzard flew off a bedraggled looking thing and started circling around the clear fall, went into the wood, and after about a couple of minutes, 30 metres in, there's a nest which I climbed to with two lusty chicks with full crops and plenty of wasp comb in there. The female sat in the nest when I got there. When I started to climb, she just flopped off into the neighbouring tree. But then that surprised me because everything I'd read had led me to believe it should have flown back to Africa from the death. But no, it just sat there looking at me, and the nest fledged successfully. As I walked back to the car, you know, thinking to myself, I'm pleased with myself, obviously, but I suppose that particular discovery of that nest in that habitat in the northwest of Britain in a climate that was totally alien, as far as I was concerned, honey buzzards breeding very, very successfully, was probably a sort of a turning point for me, a defining moment really, when I started to question the received wisdom about honey buzzards. And since then, I think we've gone a long way to putting right some of the misconceptions that are surrounding honey buzzards. So where do we look for honey buzzards? Well, the truth of it is, if you've got a large area of woodland, you can find honey buzzards the length and breadth of Britain. I'm not saying they are nesting the length and breadth of Britain, but you know, there isn't any particular woodland habitat that doesn't suit them. You're just as likely to find them in the upland conifer plantations like this as you are in lowland southern woodland. They breed, you know, right from Scotland, right down to the New Forest, right from Kent, right across to the south of Wales. And to give you some idea of how suitable this sort of habitat is, and I think this is unusual, mind, but this particular valley has four pairs of honey buzzards nesting in it. And when I say four pairs, we find four nests in this particular valley. Right at the far end, I've got a pointer. Is there anything on you to point to? Well, at the very far left on the ridge there, there's a nest there. There's a nest right on the far right-hand ridge. There's a nest underneath the dogs. I don't mean underneath in the ground, but underneath down the valley. A little tributary valley coming in the corner. There are four pairs nesting in there. The nearest two nests are 1.25 kilometres apart, and the furthest nest, the ones at the far end of the valley, and the ones that are nearest the dogs, are 4.5 km. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Having said that, we do a lot of work in the next valley over, which is identical, and we do a lot of work in the valley on the other side, which is identical, and we can't find any honey buzzards breeding in there. So I'm not turning around and saying that honey buzzards are across the country breeding at these sort of densities. This photograph taken a few years ago, they have now moved, those same four pairs are there, but they have now moved some considerable distance further apart. How do we find honey buzzards? Well, we've got to get out and we've got to put a lot of time in good viewpoints, looking over vast areas if we're going to locate honeys. You've got to be out, I would say, the second and third week of May. If you go the first week of May, there's a chance they haven't arrived. If you go the last week of May, many honey buzzards are actually sitting on eggs by the last week of May. And anybody that's done any work with honey buzzards knows that once they start incubating, they don't fly in and out of the woods, they dig tunnels and walk out. So you've got to spend a lot of time at that pre-incubation period. And of course, the weather isn't always suitable. You can see, you know, in the northwest of Britain, you've got to dress in barber jackets as well as boots and the lot. You can't walk around like they can in the south in smoking jackets and khakis. It's a long, difficult job. You've got to be able to identify honey buzzards over big distances. I think one of the problems with the survey is that there aren't enough people, maybe, perhaps I'm not doing people justice, but maybe there's not enough people who can identify honey buzzards over big distances so that you can survey them well. If you can't identify a honey buzzard at 1.5 to 2 miles away from common buzzards, it's difficult to survey areas. You know, you're only covering such small, tiny samples. And I think that's one of the major problems when it comes to actually establishing if you've got honey buzzard in an area. You need to be up at that crucial 2 weeks, and you need to be able to identify them a long way off. You're going to be real lucky if one flies by you and you can identify it, you know, through plumage or anything like that. Incidentally, this is not a honey buzzard, this is a common buzzard, just in case. They spend a lot of time loafing about in the woods. That's another reason that you don't see them. And colours don't help you. They come in all colours. I mean, I haven't seen one like this in a book. This is a bird in Wales. that's been nesting for several years, the purple male, we call him, and you can see why. I mean, it's the most unusual plum colour, a beautiful bird, absolutely beautiful bird. But if you're trying to identify honey buzzards from plumage, you're missing the point, because you get them that colour, you get like this female, an intermediate, you can get like this nesting Shropshire, and all white bird underneath. And they've got every sort of colour in between. So trying to identify them from plumage, I think, is a loser to begin with. If you're going to go down that road, then you're again very, very limited. You need to be able to identify honey buzzards, you know, from their structure. Every book you pick up will tell you honey buzzards got three bars on the tail. And I can imagine loads and loads of birds going around looking for three bars on the tail. Now, that's a good honey. That's a good honey, and he's close. You know, if that flew by you, you know, flew by you, you'd think you were lucky. And yet you don't see three bars on the tail. It's just lighting. If you look at that one, it's a good honey. You can't see the bars on the tail. I've just used it. If you start looking for plumage details or start thinking you have to see plumage details to identify honeys, you're going to miss the point. The thing with it is you've got to identify honeys from their shape and structure. There are other things. Most people, when they mention, you see descriptions of honey buzzards, they'll say about carpal patches, they'll say about the length of the tail, they'll say about the three bars. All of them are right. But experienced honey buzzard watchers, they'll tell you it's the little subtleties you've got to look for. This is skinny. I never read anybody mention how skinny they are. Over a long distance, they're such a thin little bird. They're like the difference between a hobby and a kestrel. They're skinny. They're stable when they come up. If you're looking at common buzzards all day, which is what we do, hundreds of them, and we live in a common buzzard population, which is through the roof. And you're just trying to pick out honeys from amongst them. Straight away, as the honey comes up, he's stable. He might be 2 miles away, but he's coming up rock steady, whereas your common is rocking about. You know what they're like in the air. And it's little things like that. Obviously, the length of the tail is important. Anybody got anything to say about this? Anybody got anything to say about this?
The common.
It's common, yes, good. In case you said that, it's a common. And to show you, you can't really see much plumage on that. You can see a bit, like you say, but you wouldn't be spoiling over yourself about plumage. But if we look at this bird, the difference is noticeable immediately without seeing any markings on it. If I just go back to that one, and it's roughly in the same sort of posture,
you can't catch that one again.
You know, do I have to say more? You know, the difference in the structure of those birds, forget plumage. If somebody starts describing plumage to you, stop listening. You need to be looking, somebody needs to be telling you about the shape of the bird. Obviously the tail is important. The one characteristic that does stick out is the tail. And you know, there's this is a typical honey, that long full tail. That's important. When I say full, it's always bulging a bit, the honey buzzard tail, a little notch in the end, as you know. Can't always see it a long way off, but you know, you can certainly see if the bird's got enough tail a long way off. I know there's been apparently some discourse recently on the internet concerning identifying honey buzzards. It's quite enlightening to see how much how difficult people find it. A lot of people were arguing about was something honey buzzard, wasn't something honey buzzard. It just served to illustrate how awkward these birds can be to the uninitiated. And really, there is no substitute for spending time in the field, I suppose, with people who know what they're looking at. And that is the best way to get experience with honeys, if you're going to survey for them over large areas, which is what I think most of us want to do. I stick this slide in. Yes, it has got bars on the tail, and if you've got that close, I don't think you need to worry about looking for the bars on the tail. But yes, I put it in there. It has got bars on the tail. But as this illustration shows, we've got two. Just a little tester then. What's the bird on the left? Anybody want a little guess? What's the bird? I know this is putting people on the spot. I don't like to shout out. What's the bird on the left? They're both honeys, yeah, they're both honeys. And not particularly good ones either, but they're both honeys. Rather. There are other ways to locate honeys. There are physical signs. Dug out wasp nest is an obvious one. So if you, particularly in woodland areas, if you find wasp nest dug out, you know, it's always worth looking around. Obviously, it could be a badger. What I always say is that if you find a wasp nest dug out on a woodland ride or something, have a look around the surrounding vegetation on the lower branches of nearby trees. And if honey's a bit at work, invariably you'll find bits of the carton, bits of paper, honey, wasp paper, scattered off the ground. And unless you've got some very peculiar badgers up in the north of England, it's highly likely you've been honey buzzing and have done that job. So in the woodlands we go, and if the, you know, if we can get woodlands like this, lovely, lovely woods to walk around these and look for honeys. You've got nice big space timber mixed woodland, which is oak and Douglas. You need to say just about to climb the Douglas, where the nest is. But for every pair that nest in habitat like that, you've got just as many that nest in habitat such as this, which is unthinned western hemlock, which is like a, like when you, as you can see, if you get off that fire break, it's not even a rain. It's as black as 2 o'clock in the morning. And the honeys nest, you know, this is one of the favourite habitats in Wales, is hemlock. And they nest by accessing it through the top of the canopy, not through the timber underneath. So they're a little bit like forest merlins, they're right in the top. So walking around underneath is no help. If you look up, you can't see any nests. Finding them in this sort of habitat is a nightmare. I can assure you, I've spent a long time trying to find them in that sort of habitat. The nest is situated, you know, again, in a variety of places in the trees. This is the centre tree. There's an easy nest to see in a big Douglas. There's another nest that's relatively easy to see in an oak up in the top. That oak there, you can see it at the point there. Having said that, don't fail to notice the rhododendron underneath. You've got to walk round in that way to try and find these, and it's obviously over your head. But for as many nests that are in woodland itself, you'll get some that will throw you. We've had a honey that's nested in this oak adjacent to that fir, and we spent hours and hours trying to locate that because we were looking in the closed canopy. There were a group of trees that was separated from the canopy like this. Last place we wanted to look, thought to look at, it's only out of desperation we went there, and that's where it's nested. So they'll nest in all sorts of places. And this is a nest in Wales. It's nesting in a birch in a large plantation. That birch is the one that's sort of going diagonally across the page. It's on the top of a little cliff and the root plates come out. The birch just fell over a bit. And you can't climb up the birch to get to the nest because the root plate will come right out and the tree will collapse. So you have to climb up the larch, lasso the birch and pull it across and examine the nest contents and do what you've got to do then. And then when you lose go with the rope, make sure the eggs don't go flying up to the other end of the tree. Of course. You can't see that nest. Nobody can point it out to you. You can't see it. We couldn't see it. We walked around in that wood for ages and ages. And I know Brian Effins is here. I don't know if he's here, but he was with me. I hope you won't mind me saying, but he's walking in front of me. And he went right under it and walked off and off through the wood. He sent me the two feathers. You know, I said to me, look, two molted feathers right under the nest. Still couldn't see it.
That's your lunchtime plan.
Thanks for that. Yeah. But if you do your homework right and you've spent the time and you've got the birds going into the wood and you've had a look around, this is what you hope to see, is a bird obviously incubating. And is that sharp? I can't see from here all the time.
Yep.
Obviously, there's usually a lot more foliage around nests like that as well, so you're trying to look for that old yellow eye looking out from the leaves. Make sure you don't confuse it with a wood pigeon and go home all excited, you know. Some nests are very high, you know, these nests are 70, 80 foot in a Douglas. But having said that, there are just as many nests that are quite low. The sort of timber they nest in is almost irrelevant. We've had them down to just under 20 foot, you know, and then every sort of range in between. Whatever size the trees are, they'll get in. If the habitat is suitable in every other respect. You don't need big timber. When you climb the honeybuzz nests, they are very tolerant birds. Most birds sit very tight. They don't flush until you at least, you know, climb in the tree. They certainly don't flush when you sort of walk through the woods. They don't flush till you climb the trees. Most birds will sit very tight till you get to the nest itself before they come off, like this bird here. Many of them, if the nest is along a limb or something, will actually mantle. They'll actually start to stick their wings out and threaten you. You know, you're in full view, they just will try and stand their ground, like this female is starting to do. And at one nest, I've got to tell you a story about this nest in Shropshire that I claimed to, you meet at the bottom, I was claiming that. We knew where it was, obviously, beforehand. Took the camera in the bag, and my mates were saying, oh, she's still on. I said, oh, she'll go off now in a minute. I put my head over the edge, and that's what she's doing. Now, you can imagine how close they are. Those wingtips coming towards us are pressing the end of my nose. She just stood there. I said, well, I can't believe this. This is she won't go. So I get my camera in my bag, and I haven't got one of these fancy automatic all singing, all dancing jobs. Got an old-fashioned camera, get out of the bag with a standard lens, which everyone's going to photograph the eggs. And I take half a dozen shots of it. I thought, I can't believe this, she's not going to stay here. Took half a dozen shots of it like that. I ran out of film. I had a spare film in the bag. Took the case off the camera, wound it all back, stuck the new film on, wound another half dozen shots, took another half dozen like that. I had pushed that bird to get off the nest. And then she sat in the next tree, looking. The last that will clear off from the wood and you don't see them. But they are remarkably tolerant birds. Don't mean to say you take liberties with them, but they are surprisingly tolerant, much against what had been previously presumed. Easy birds to work. They invariably lay two eggs. And you can sometimes identify females, track females by the egg type, because they lay eggs which are quite varied. No prejudice for guessing where this nest is. It's obviously not in Wales. This big luxurious thing is in the is in Sussex, as you would imagine, right? And even in one nest, you've got two different colour eggs. These are not a tree nest in Peregrine, no. This is a very, very rich eggs, very heavily marked eggs in an oak. These little red eggs, we call them, in the spruce plantation. Any praises for guessing where this is? One piece of greenery stuck in it.
Yes.
And I include this shot. I include this shot because this is in a hemlock. This is in Wales again. Very often you'll come across honey buzzard nests with eggs with wasp paper in them or little bits of wasp comb. And the suggestion seems to be that they may be bringing food back to a nest with eggs, which would be very unusual in a raptor. I don't think that's what's happening. I don't think they eat wasps much at all during incubation. I think they save them up till later on. And you'll see what my reasons are shortly. But I think what happens is that the male, when the wasp nests are small, still periodically brings the odd small wasp nest back for the female as some sort of a pair bonding ritual to prove that he can find wasp nests later on in the season when they're required. And I think that what happens is that the female with her decorative instincts, or even the male, is actually bringing back out of the empty comb or bits of wasp paper just to decorate the nest. They sometimes lay three eggs, which is a sign obviously that the birds are, you think, are doing quite well, and even those three eggs are all different. And if you were to wonder where would a bird lay three eggs, it suggests the bird's doing well. You'd think in you know, New Forest or down in the south, these were in the West Wales. These are chicks. I'll go through this quite quickly. The chicks are like most raptors. These are chicks 2 or 3 days old. There's usually a difference in size. There's usually 2 or 3 days difference between the chicks and in the laying of the eggs. But they grow rapidly, and at 2.5 weeks, the pin is just starting to break. You can see copious amounts of comb in there. And then by sort of 5 weeks, they've got to this stage. And one of the things that's good about honey buzzards is if you can work them to a good age, and a bit like ospreys and kites, they're not jumpers. You couldn't go, you know, if you went to a goshawk nest and bird that, they'd be gone. But you know, honey buzzards tend to be quite calm in the nest, and you can if you're bringing them or doing some work with them, you can visit the nest while they're young, quite big. Sometimes they have three young. I borrowed this slide because I've not seen three young in a nest, and it's obviously a lovely big nest. And again, you'd think if honey buzzards were doing so well in this country, they can rear three young. You tend to think it would be in the south where traditionally they've always been regarded as their stronghold, but this is a nest in the Highlands of Scotland. And I think one of the things that's remarkable is that if, you know, 20 years ago, you and your mate were saying, well, where should we go to see some honey buzzards? And he said, oh, we'll go to Scotland. You'd think you were mad. you know, you take it completely the wrong direction, but it just goes to show how many misconceptions there have been about penny buzzards over a great number of years. And just to show that they don't have it all their own way down in the south, this little tiny little nest that's bigger than a crow is in Kent, and these two chicks have squeezed on this nest. They're about 3 weeks, just over 3 weeks old, and I can assure you by the time they were 6 weeks old, they didn't fit on there at all. But that was a very, very tiny nest. But this is the little fowl that is the key to honey buzzard success in this country. Or this is what we believe anyway. Obviously they're specialised to feed on wasps, and indeed they do feed heavily upon wasps, as this bird demonstrates. It also shows that the adults are quite capable of looking down at the nearest McDonald's and getting a double wasp burger. Anyway, obviously wasp is key to their success. Food is key to their success, and especially wasp feeders. And they seem to be able to find wasps easily, no matter where they're breeding. In the west of Britain, where it's cold and wet very often, they are piling wasps into their nests. There's not a problem finding wasps. The weather does really not have an impact on wasp populations, not in this country. Temperature would, but the rain and what have you is no different. So we are, wasp numbers are not limited, I don't think, either. But we collect fecal samples from nests that we analyse in Cardiff University. We've done that for many, many years now. And we climb up to a lot of nests, obviously, to gather samples. And what we don't see is much of the remains of anything else in these nests. And one of the things we started to notice when we were putting hides up is that unusual male again. One of the things we found out from hides, and this is something we couldn't have done any other way really, was the number of frogs that were going in, as this female has got here. The number of frogs that were going in the nest was quite remarkable. And if you climb to the nest to examine the nest contents, there's very little evidence of those frogs in the nest. They're bringing in frogs this sort of size, right? Big frogs. They get them not from lakes or ponds by and large. A lot of them are getting them from the ruts and the heavy machines have made these days in the forestry, where they're full of water. You know, you'll go around the woods and they're full of tadpoles or whatever. They seem to be getting them from places like that. And interestingly, they tend to eat the whole frog. And then if you look at the nest contents, there's nothing in there. So you'd have no idea that that bird had been eating frog. Not from examining the nest itself anyway. And that was happening again and again and again. And I have to say that this particular nest that we had under observation, nearly 50% of the prey items that were brought in were frog. The rest was wasp comb, but nearly 50% was frog. Also, without knowing for sure, but I wouldn't mind guessing, looking at the size of the frogs, probably the biomass of frog going into the nest was bigger than the wasp that was going in. So when it comes to deciding what do honey buzzards require in this country, we really don't know. We really don't know. That's some work that I'm hoping we can get done in the next couple of years or thing later on. But we hadn't realised how important frog was in the diet, and it comes in again and again and again. And one of the local foresters with me, anyway, you know, on the strength of this, rather than thinking to ourselves, well, we must look after our woodlands in terms of trees, is actually gone and got a big machine in and dug another 7 or 8 ponds in the wood. Which may be, for all I know and for all we know, what they need. Certainly they eat a lot of frogs. Interestingly, this bird here, it was left with this frog by the adult. It had ripped a bit of its throat out, it had ripped a couple of bits of flesh off its legs, and it left it with the chick to try and get on with it. The chick didn't make much of a job of it, actually. It had plenty of wasp comb in it, so it had a few pulls at this frog and dragged it around a bit. And then it started to eat some wasp that was left in the nest. And the frog, amazingly, started hopping around. Now, I know they're tapping wings, but I have to say, I'm amazed that frog's hopping about. And he hopped over the edge of the nest and fell 60 foot. And I was in a hide, and I thought, when I get down, he's still going to be alive. He's so tough. So I have to say, he was dead at the bottom. That finished him. Honey buzzards find their food by spending a lot of time sitting about under the canopy, which is why when you are surveying areas for honeys, you know, or sometimes you're lucky in the sky and you can't miss them, but by and large they're not in the air as much as other raptors. You know, common buzzers are going to score all the time. But Honey's put in infrequent appearances. It's because they spend so much time under the canopy like this, watching for everything. We've watched them go gliding along the top of the trees and slip into a piece of timber, and they'll be in there 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours before they'll pop out again. And when you go in there, you might find 6 or 7 wasp nests dug out, all in a fairly small area. They spend a lot of time under the canopy, and even though they can appear to be relaxed like this one, is obviously practicing the disco, female, which is sitting very close to its nest. Actually, I was lucky enough to move the camera onto her because she was sitting close. Even though they sit about and relax and stretch and do all sorts of things, it doesn't take a second. The minute a wasp goes by or anything attracts its attention, up goes its head and sleeps itself down, you know, and it stares and stares and watches, and it doesn't miss much at all within the forest canopy. But, you get it. They're very successful birds, but they're not always successful. This is a nest in the Marche district, I think. And when I climbed to this nest to get the chicks out for ringing, the chick behind was dead, and it had only been dead about half an hour. It certainly had been dead an hour. There was no flies on it. There was no, his eyes were intact. Weather was good. Couldn't understand why. So I took it down and I was going to send it off somewhere. When I got back to the car, I was poking around inside its throat, as you do, just for your sandwiches. And I could see something down in there, a bit of a lump in there, pulled out a frog's head. But it didn't come right out because attached to the frog's head was a length of skin, frog skin, which was wrapped around the root of the honey buzzard's tongue. It couldn't swallow it, couldn't bring it up. And it's the first recorded instance of any person dying with a frog in his throat.
Oh.
When they fledge, these are recently fledged honey buzzards, they look like common buzzards at this time. When they recently fledged, there is sometimes, if you've got high goshawk populations, a bit of a problem. I was watching at the nest on one side of a valley, I'd driven up into the forest. And the young were fledged. I knew they'd been fledged a day or two because we'd run them. And I'd seen the adult going in and out fine, and all of a sudden the adult started shouting, making a hell of a row, shouting his head off. And it went on for about 20 minutes, so I thought, well, somebody's trying to climb the nest. I drove round in the car, went under the nest, and this is what I found underneath. It didn't take me long to guess what had done it, so I hid in a little rhododendron bush, which was right by the side of it. I'd only been there about 10 minutes, and there was a clap of wings and this horrible, ugly, murdering swine turned up, you know, and landed on it. This wasn't this particular bird. If I'd have had a big enough stick, I'd have clapped it on the head. When young honey buzzards are just fledged, they flap about a lot, and I think what happens is that they attract attention to themselves, you know, particularly if it's a bit breezy or something, and then there is a risk, small risk, I say, of gosh predation. But having said all that, they invariably lay 2 eggs. They're very, very successful birds in this country. Very successful. Our figures, albeit skewed towards successful nests, our figures are better for nesting success than on the continent. They invariably lay 2 eggs. They invariably have 2 young. They hatch 2 young. And they are such good parents that they invariably get those 2 young to fledge it. A remarkable success rate. So what's the future for honey buzzards in this country? I mean, are they going to go the same way as hobbies? Some people would speculate. Now, you know, I know it sounds ridiculous to think honey buzzards might go the same way as hobbies, and I'm not saying they will, but what's important to note is that, I mean, I live in East Wales, in the Usk Valley, and 20 years ago, if I'd seen a hobby anywhere near where I live, it would have been a red letter day. Now, that is a pair of photographs that I can see from my house. And I've been every couple of miles up the Usk Valley, we've got hobbies. You're more likely to see hobby now than you were Kestrel. So are they going to go the same way hobbies? I don't think they're going to be quite as, I'm sure Bob will explain this afternoon, I don't think they're going to go quite that way, but certainly we do need to do a lot more work on honeys if we're going to discover what their needs are. As I said about the frogs, we need to, you know, we didn't know that until we put a lot of time in, and what we're trying to do at the moment is to examine as many nests as we can, see what productivity is. We're ringing, we are colour ringing, we've got a colour ringing scheme, we've had some returns, one from Guinea in Africa. We are at the moment trying to raise funds to get tracking, not satellite tracking, which has been done very successfully, but radio tracking of an adult that we can catch at the nest site. and then track what habitat it's using within the forest, because we don't know, is it going to ponds all the time? Does it change partway through? What sort of timber is it spending most of its time in to find food? And what we would hope is that we can find some way of putting together some sort of a blueprint for the Forestry Commission or for landowners where they could manage their woodlands successfully to either maintain honey buzzard populations or to attract honey buzzards. We don't know what they need at the moment. That's our current aim. And then hopefully, if we can do that successfully, we should be able to see sites like this. All of us should be privileged, maybe at some time or other, to see something as beautiful as this on our doorsteps.
Just to say that lunch is across the way in the main dining hall. Can we be ready to start certainly at 2:00, please? Or restart, thank you.
Now we can get out this way, can we?
No, that was two good talks.
Yeah, enjoyed the osprey and the honey buzzard. Yeah. Nice to have enthusiasm and upbeatness, isn't it? Yeah, it's not bad, is it? Yeah, well, I'm gonna get back in looking at it.